This is Lake Effect from 89.7 WUWM, Milwaukee's NPR. Thanks for joining us. I'm Bonnie North.
And I'm Joy Powers. 50 years ago today, the Reverend Martin Luther King Jr. was assassinated. A year prior, in April of 1967, the civil rights icon gave a speech at Stanford University entitled The Other America. King spoke about the many things the civil rights movement was able to accomplish, but the main focus was on the road ahead and the fight for what he called genuine equality.
Although the fight for the Civil Rights Act was not easily won, King believed the battles yet to come would be far more troublesome.
All of these things represented strides, but we must see that the struggle today is much more difficult. It's more difficult today because we are struggling now for genuine equality. And it's much easier to integrate a lunch counter than it is to guarantee a livable income and a good solid job. It's much easier to guarantee the right to vote than it is to guarantee the right to live in sanitary, decent housing conditions. It is much easier to integrate a public park than it is to make genuine quality integrated education a reality. And so today we are struggling for something which says we demand genuine equality.
King goes on to cite troubling statistics about black and white disparities which remained in the United States, like unemployment. In 1967, black unemployment was double the rate of white unemployment, which was significantly worse than it had been just two decades earlier. But in 2018, the disparities are even more staggering.
In the state of Wisconsin, black unemployment is nearly three times as high as white unemployment. The Milwaukee area has the most segregated schools of any metropolitan area in the country. And some say segregation in public schools is just as bad as it was when King gave this speech. Half a century has passed, and we are still struggling with the issues King was trying to combat, the issues he knew would be tremendously difficult to overcome.
Almost a year after the date that speech was given, King was assassinated. His death sparked riots around the country, which we'll hear more about later. But earlier this year, I had the chance to talk to Dr. Bernice King, Martin Luther King Jr.'s youngest daughter. In a conversation on stage at the Pabst Theater, presented by the Jewish Community Center Milwaukee and the Milwaukee Urban League, we talked about her father's legacy, her work, and what life was like after that harrowing day in 1968.
My father was assassinated when I was five. You know, that kind of not only took him out of my life, it kind of repositioned my mother too, because she continued the work and she couldn't be as present as she was prior to his assassination. So it's kind of a displacement of both parents. I don't think people think about that, you know, in this whole process. I grew up where she didn't get an opportunity to come to a lot of my extracurricular activities. I remember some piano recitals, but a lot of the sports that I was involved in, I don't remember my mother ever showing up, maybe for a couple of soccer games. And I played a lot of different sports because she was really focused on advancing the legacy. But in the midst of all of this, you know, we got news at age six that my uncle mysteriously found in his swimming pool dead. He became like a surrogate father for me. He did not drown because he didn't have water in his lungs. He was present when my father was assassinated. We believe there's some connection there for why he's not here with us. At 11 years old, my grandmother was shot in church. In a matter of 6 years, I had these three tragic deaths, trying to process through all of that. And in the initial, you know, months after my father was assassinated, my mother brought a psychologist to make sure we were okay, and they thought we were okay. But actually, through Uncle A.D. and then Big Mama, my father's mother, who got killed in church, I wasn't okay emotionally. And, I'll say to this very day, I'm still dealing with some issues because that's a lot of trauma to deal with. and not deal with it. And I didn't really start seeing counselors until I was in my mid-20s. But the thread of all of the pain and, you know, the abandonment issues, fear, all that stuff coupled together, you know, hurt, loss, everything together ended up sending me through a whole, you know, series of anger, rage, all kind of feelings. And to the point that I went through some years of my life where, and I'm going to say it because I said it to other audience, where I literally, you didn't know it, but I literally hated white people, and especially white males. And, you know, the Lord began to do some things in my life through getting called into ministry, accepting that call, still carrying some of that hate in my heart. And I went on this television show in 2000 with a gentleman who happens to be an evangelical, James Robeson. And in the middle of him interviewing me about, you know, my father, the loss and everything, he said, "Can I give you a hug?" Now, in my heart, I was like, uh-uh. But I had been taught better by my mom, so I just, you know, I said, being cordial, yes. And it was one of the most genuine hugs that I had ever received in my life. And something as simple as that began to turn the tide in my heart. And then, you know, certain things, God would start doing things and highlighting things with white males around me. And I was like, wow. And it gave me a whole different perspective because my hate was in response to my loss. You know, I felt like, you know, white people killed him, not necessarily James or Ray, but that's a whole nother story. You know, I felt like black people weren't doing everything they could do. You know, I was angry at God too, because I felt like he could have stopped it and didn't. So that was the emotional side of growing up. But we grew up very normal. We didn't have bodyguards other than when James and Ray escaped from jail. My mother raised us very normally in Vine City, which is considered, you know, the ghetto. That's where my father chose to live amongst the people, and she remained there up until a year or two before her death. Had friends, you know, ironically, I grew up having a lot of white friends in elementary school because I went to a private school, actually private and a lot of Jewish friends, as a matter of fact. And then I switched over to a public school, predominantly black, where I graduated from. So I had a normal upbringing, and, you know, it's difficult. The difficulty is growing up in a normal way, but being recognized as a part of a royal family, you get a little schizophrenic from time to time. Because there are many places you go and people are like, you're the daughter of. And I'm sitting up like, and? You know, because my mother just raised us to be normal, you know, down to earth, you know, kids and ultimately adults. And so sometimes I walk around like, God, you know, what do I do? I mean, if I try to be normal, people want me to be royal. If I try to be royal, people want to bring me back down to normal. So it's been an interesting journey. But it was fun in our household. We had a lot of fun. My dad used to, you know, my sister said he was her buddy. He used to love to play with us, and because we were like his refuge when, you know, he would come home from everything. And one time they were playing basketball in the house. And of course, you know, my mother cringed because she didn't want any of the dishes broken. But, you know, he was free. So it didn't upset her too much because she wanted him to have that freedom. And he, you know, he loved to joke. People should know that. Even though you see the serious Martin Luther King, he loved to joke. Had a great sense of humor. You know, we had a great house. And I'll be honest, I'm glad we didn't grow up with guns in our house, because the anger that I was carrying around, somebody probably would have been dead, literally.
And you wouldn't be here.
I wouldn't be here.
Bernice King is a minister, an activist, and the youngest daughter of civil rights leader Martin Luther King Jr., who was assassinated 50 years ago today.
People around the country are celebrating the life and work of Dr. King today in a series of remembrances. Bernice King has a simple request for how people remember her father today. At 6:01 p.m., groups and individuals will be ringing bells to remember the moment her father was struck down. 39 rings for the 39 years of his life.